the best thing would be
House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Monday, May 15th, 2017. And the first item on the agenda today is Senate Bill 931. Call Senator Prozansky, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, Senate Bill 931A allows a court to replace jurors discharged during trial or sentencing deliberations if both parties gave consent prior to the start of trial. It also gives the judge discretion to decide when and how to select alternate jurors, when and how additional peremptory challenges may be used, and when and how the alternate jurors will be informed of their status. There is a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and no amendments.
Thank you. Senator, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Floyd Prozansky, State Senator, District 4. Includes parts of Lane and Douglas counties. Thank you very much for taking up Senate Bill 931. Circuit Court Judge Charlie Nanache is the individual who has requested this bill through my office on a couple occasions. I've known Judge Nanache for a number of years, and he and other circuit court judges in Lane County have shared their thoughts as to how they feel that we can make the criminal justice system more efficient and effective in dealing with jury trials. Judge Nanache has had a medical issue that's come up. I think he may have blown his knee out. I understood he was going to be here and was going to give testimony and then leave. Oh, he's on the phone. Oh, wonderful. So what I'll do is just this. I'll preview it for Judge Nanache because I understand he has a medical appointment like at 1:30. So maybe, Mr. Chair, instead of me going into greater detail now, allowing Judge Nanache say what he needs to say, and then I can maybe answer questions at that point.
Okay, thank you.
Judge Zanashi, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
Okay, please go ahead, Judge.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today regarding Senate Bill 931. My name is Charles Zanashi. I'm a circuit court judge here in Lane County, Oregon. I want to be clear that the views I express are my own, and I do not speak on behalf of the Oregon Judicial Department or any other entity. Senate Bill 931 is intended to make criminal jury trials more efficient for all involved. It does this by making two changes to the existing law. It modifies the procedure for selecting alternative jurors to give trial judges greater discretion on how such jurors are selected. Second, it gives trial judges a tool for avoiding expensive mistrials in cases where a juror becomes unable to complete deliberations. I'll briefly explain these changes in context for you. In criminal cases, a defendant is entitled to a jury of either 6 or 12 persons. The court can also appoint up to 6 persons to serve as alternate jurors. Alternate jurors are subject to the same rules as regular jurors and sit through the entire trial. However, they do not participate in deliberations unless one of the regular jurors becomes unable to complete deliberations complete the trial, before deliberations begin. In essence, they act as an insurance policy to make sure that the trial gets completed and the jury begins deliberations. With regard to Senate Bill 931's changes to the alternate juror selection process, Oregon law statutes currently require that regular jury be selected and sworn before the alternates are selected. This makes it clear to everyone, including the jurors, who the alternates are on the panel. Judges, defense lawyers, and prosecutors generally are concerned that persons who know they are alternates may not give the proceedings their full attention. As a result, courts have routinely deviated from the statutory process. These deviations have taken a wide variety of forms, too many, in fact, for me to inventory here. The first part of Senate Bill 931 changes those existing statutes to allow for the practice that's currently being done in Oregon courts. It matches changes that have already been made to the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure, and it is not controversial in any way. With regard to Senate Bill 931's changes to the timing of appointing alternate jurors to replace regular jurors, under current law, alternate jurors are discharged once the jury begins deliberations. The only exception to that discharge is when there are sentencing factors that must be tried to the jury, in which case alternates may be reserved for use during the sentencing phase of the proceeding. The problem is that if a juror becomes ill or otherwise unable to participate in deliberations before a verdict is reached, the court must declare a mistrial and start all over again unless the parties consent to allowing fewer than the usual number of jurors to proceed. As you can imagine, starting all over again can be very expensive and engender significant delays in such cases. This is a waste of resources in situations where the alternate jurors have been selected by all of the parties, have heard all of the evidence, and have heard the arguments of counsel, could simply be appointed to replace a missing juror. Thus, the second change that Senate Bill 931 makes is to allow judges, with the consent of the parties, to replace a missing juror who becomes unable to complete deliberations with one of the alternates. Again, a similar change has already been made to the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure, although that rule gives trial judges the authority to replace a juror with an alternate without the need of the consent of the parties. Please note that Senate Bill 931 requires a consent to the substitution to be given at the beginning of the trial rather than after the jury, right at the time the jury is selected, rather than at the time of the substitution. Some have suggested that this later time is more appropriate. By allowing the parties to wait until after the deliberations have begun before consenting to the procedure, it's my concern that this most certainly will result in decisions, whether to consent or not, will be influenced by factors such as the lawyer's perception of how a particular cross-examination went or how the lawyer did in making his or her closing argument. Requiring consent at the beginning of the trial, when the parties are most optimistic about the outcome of the case, leads to less legal gamesmanship. Moreover, it's been my practice to ask the parties to consent to this procedure even prior to the selection of the jury, and no one has ever said that he or she needs to wait to the completion of the trial in order to make that decision. I also wish to briefly note that Senate Bill 931 makes a change to ORS 136733 and ORS 163.150. I want to clarify that those changes simply allow the parties to consent at the beginning of the trial to substitution during deliberations of the sentencing or aggravating factor phase of the trial. It is not intended and does not require the parties to consent to substituting an alternate juror or for a regular juror prior to the beginning of deliberations on the sentencing or enhancement factors. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Are there any questions for anybody on the panel? Thank you, Your Honor, that there are no questions, and we appreciate your testimony.
All right, thank you very much. I'm going to hang up, unfortunately. I have a doctor's appointment, I think. Senator Brzezinski made a reference to that. So
he did. Take care
thank you very much.
Thank you, and take care of yourself, please.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And Mr. Chair, the only thing I would, stress, because I do know that I expect that you'll have testimony as to an alternative as to when the decision should be made. I would ask you to reflect on Judge Sinache's statements that are on his written testimony. And from my perspective as a prosecutor, this decision needs to be made at the front end of the trial to allow for the parties, including the prosecutor, to wait until the conclusion of the trial, knowing how we felt we presented. How we might think a juror that we sized up one way may be looking at a different way, we really would be doing, as the judge said, gamemanship. So this is something that should required at the front end, and I hope that you will support Senate Bill 931 because it will, in fact, allow for our criminal justice system to run more smoothly and effectively. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Vile.
Yes, Chair Barker, Senator Brzezinski. I can tell you that from my experience, this is not a problem just in the criminal environment, and I'm wondering if there was any conversation about applying these same rules to the civil jury cases.
Mr. Chair, Representative Al, that did not come up in our conversations, and I do not remember in my discussions individually with Judge Sinache that he brought this up. I thought there was some other procedure already in place. I don't do civil work, but I thought there was some other mechanism that they already have in place. I may be wrong on that.
Yeah, there's a alternate juror provision in the civil environment, but it's got some of the same problems this does. That we'll take that up later then. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any further?
Just to follow up with what Senator said, I mean, yeah, the task force identified it was they were only focusing on the criminal cases, right?
Okay. Okay, thank you, Senator.
All right, thank you very much.
And I don't have anybody else signed up. Is there anybody else that wanted to testify? Okay. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 931A and open a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 931A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves Senate Bill 931A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. I'll carry the bill. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 497A.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, Senate Bill 497A adds criminal citation and criminal charge as records that can be expunged by a court in order to clarify that an individual does not have to be taken into physical custody in order to be eligible for an expungement. There is a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and no amendments.
Okay, thank you. Jeffrey Lowe and Gail Meyer, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, here in support of Senate Bill 497. We would characterize this as a technical fix trying to close a hole that exists in our expungement statutes, and I also sometimes call it the lesser included expungement bill, because these are records here that are less severe than those that can be set aside. So the expungement statute right now allows for a person to set aside the record of a conviction and the record of an arrest. There are some times, however, when records can exist showing the issuance of a citation or of a charge that don't result in either of those. More specifically, if someone is cited to appear in the field, so they have an encounter with a law enforcement officer might issue them a citation to show up in court. They show up in court, and then no charges are filed. So they're free to go. Often they turn around and walk out of the courtroom and think that there's no record that will dog them, but in fact that record of the citation is there, but it's not the record of an arrest. And so this actually has come up in some counties where some district attorneys have been objecting now to petitions to set aside these instances. So the fix was to tie this up. As originally introduced, we thought we had it right, but the DAs had a few concerns. And so our people sat down with their people, and they came up with the current language in the engrossed version. So just again to emphasize, this doesn't expand the number of crimes. This doesn't expand the time frame. This doesn't expand or contract any pre-qualifications. All it does is address the nature of the record that can be set aside, and it picks up those that don't now result in a formal conviction or a formal arrest.
Thank you, Mr. Lowe.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of this committee. My name is Jeffrey Lowe, last name spelled L-O-W-E. I'm a Multnomah County Deputy District Attorney, and I'm also here on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. I'm here also in support of Senate Bill 497A. I do agree that this is a technical fix. It is one that does capture some things that have slipped by prosecutors for years, but suddenly in the last year, I know at least one person in my office has been filing because we feel obligated to. That's what the law requires. We have been objecting to citations and other types of charges from being expunged from the record because that's what we do as prosecutors. But as prosecutors, we also agree that this is a necessary fix. We are in support of it. My colleague here already mentioned the situation where there are citations. A police officer cites you. You never actually get charged by the DA. You think it's gone. It's there forever. The second situation that we're talking about in this bill is with regards to charged events. So the other situation would be you are a person who suddenly finds yourself indicted for some particular crime. You were never arrested. You were never cited, but indicted by a grand jury somewhere in this state, and then your charge gets dismissed. What do you do now? You don't qualify under the statute to have that dismissed charge set aside from your record. This technical language that is in the bill would cover those situations as well, and that's why we are in support of it. We think it's a fair and right thing to do.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Representative Leininger.
I'd like to make a comment. I, in the job I do outside of legislating, I work with a part of the public defender's office that tries to expunge people's past offenses, and this came up as an issue where people who've done something that involves less culpability may be stuck permanently with something undesirable on their record, and I think that this bill has been, it sounds like you've both worked really hard together with your respective members to make sure that this bill meets the need in a way that everyone can live with, and I think it sounds like a really positive step as we help people move forward and build positive lives. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 497A.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 497A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williams moves Senate Bill 497A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Leininger will be the carrier.
Thank you.
There it is.
Hi, Josh. Good to see you too. Happy Monday.
Oh, so it's a good thing.
It's a good thing. You too, Andy.
I wish every day was a Monday.
Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 507.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 507 is a cleanup of a 2015 amendment to the adult expungement statute or set-aside statute that you just heard about. The bill makes clear that a Class C felony may be set aside unless it's prohibited by another provision of law.
Thank you. Again, Mr. Lowe, please.
Will you repeat that one more time?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the bill clarifies that a Class C felony is subject to expunction.
Chair Barker, members of this committee, again, Jeffrey Lowe, L-O-W-E, Multnomah County Deputy District Attorney, as well as here on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 507. It is a technical fix, again, to the expungement statute 137.225. Alex Bassos from the Metropolitan Public Defender's Office and I worked on this statute 2 years ago, and sometimes when you try for efficiency, it doesn't necessarily make a statute better, cleaner, or clearer. And that is exactly what happened when we rewrote the statute to try to restructure it in a sensible way for people to understand. We simply cited ORS 161705, which is the statute that reduces C felonies to misdemeanors when a judge makes a certain determination or a district attorney elects to do that. We thought that would capture all C felonies that were set aside as eligible. Apparently that has not happened throughout the state. There are issues. And we want, therefore, to add this back into the statute to make it very, very clear to everyone that all C felonies except those enumerated within the statute are eligible for a set-aside.
Great. Okay, thank you. Any questions? Thank you again.
Thank you.
Is the public hearing open a work session on Senate Bill 507?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 507 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Williams moves Senate Bill 507 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any more discussion or any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Greenlick, would you like to carry that one?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Representative Greenlick will be the carrier. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 261A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 261A creates a rape shield statute applicable in civil proceedings that allege sexual misconduct. The bill creates a general rule that evidence concerning the alleged victim's sexual predisposition or sexual behavior is inadmissible in these cases unless, after an in-camera hearing, the court determines that the victim has placed the evidence in controversy and the probative value of the evidence substantially outweighs the danger of harm and unfair prejudice.
Okay, we have four people signed up, so Barbara Ross, Jackie Swanson, and Brenda Tracy. Please go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Barbara Ross. I'm with the League of Women Voters, and I just want to We have previously submitted testimony, and I just want to support this bill and say it is appropriate that the only evidence that's relevant in these cases is whether the victim consented to sex in that particular instance. The way someone dresses, dances, flirts, or appears should not be part of the evidence. It's a matter of the record showing whether the victim whether it was actually consensual in this particular instance. And so I also just want to comment, I appreciate your committee's work on these small bills. They don't affect a lot of people, but they are cleanups, and they're making our system more effective. And so while we're worrying about revenue and big issues, I think it's really exemplary that you're spending the time and effort to make these practical, small fixes that do straighten out our system and make it more effective for victims.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Tracy, do you want to?
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Barker and members of the committee. My name is Brenda Tracy. I was just trying to move it. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 261. I think that we've done a really good job of advocating for victims of rape and survivors in our state. We've done some really good work the last two sessions on extending the statute of limitations. We've done Melissa's Law with the rape kits and everything. And I think we are helping to foster a culture with our laws that is helping survivors to come forward, to not feel ashamed, to pursue justice, and to not be shamed and blamed into silence for many, many years. And I think that this is a small fix, but it's a big fix, because in criminal cases, we have a rape shield law already, so you can't talk about prior sexual history. You can't blame and shame the victim. But in our civil cases, we can. So we can talk about what were you wearing, who were your prior sexual partners. And unfortunately, our culture still believes a lot of these things. They believe that if you had prior sex, consensual sex with someone, then you couldn't have been raped. They believe that if you were dressed in a certain way or at a certain place and you were drinking, then somehow you were asking for it. Survivors are continuously tasked with proving why we didn't cause our own rape. We're constantly tasked with having to prove what it is that we did or didn't do to prevent our own rape. The onus is always on the victim, and it's unfair, and it's not okay. I think it's important that we work on making our avenues of justice more friendly for the survivor, and that's what this does in civil cases, because I believe that as a survivor myself, I believe that we should have access to both the criminal system and the civil system, and it should be our decision of which one we pursue. But as it is right now, civil system is really scary. Because if I'm going to go forward, then I'm going to be asked, what were you doing? What were you wearing? And I'm going to be blamed and I'm going to be shamed. I'm probably not going to want to do it. I personally am pretty strong. I speak on these issues publicly. I take a lot of my own victim blaming and shaming on a daily basis, on a national scale. And I don't even think I would want to go pursue a civil case right now. Not the way it is in Oregon. It's too scary. And it's too much. It's just more trauma on top of what we've already done. So I think this is something that we can do to help our survivors in our state and just continue this forward momentum of getting it right in our state. And I'm really happy to be part of this bill. And I just would appreciate your support on it. It may seem like a little thing, but eventually it's going to be a big thing because we're going to see more and more survivors coming forward. We're going to see more justice exacted in our state. So thank you.
Thank you. Please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Jacqueline Swanson. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of SB 261. Rape shield laws are one of the earliest examples of crime victims' rights, both on the federal level as well as the state level. Born out of the unique societal implications of gendered and sexual violence on decision makers within the courtroom. Prior to the passage of rape shield statutes, which first passed by Michigan, I believe was the first state, in 1974, Congress adopted Federal Rule of Evidence 412 in 1978, which created a rape shield statute applicable to criminal proceedings. Nearly every state, including Oregon, followed suit. So we have had a law on the books since 1981, which prevents introduction of sexual predisposition evidence in our criminal cases. In 1994, Congress recognized the need for application of these rules in the civil justice system as well, amended FRE 412 to include and make the rule apply to civil cases as well as criminal. 17 states followed suit and went back in and amended their rape shield statutes. Unfortunately, we were not one of them. This law would make us consistent with more than 20 years of federal case law, which made civil rape shields applicable, and would, as my colleagues have spoken and testified about, reaffirm the fact that this idea that sexual propensity bears on credibility and consent, which are grounded in these cultural attitudes and myths about sexual conduct, is inappropriate and is something that we will not accept here in Oregon. So for all of these reasons and more, I support passage of SB 261, and I welcome any questions you may have for me.
Does anybody have any questions for this panel? Representative Leininger.
Well, I want to express my strong support for the bill. I think our law right now requires survivors to walk through a gauntlet of humiliation after having experienced a sexual assault if they want to get to justice in a civil court setting, and that's just not right. And this helps make a more fair and just situation for survivors, and I really appreciate you bringing the bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, just to piggyback on Representative Leininger's comments, some of you mentioned this was a small bill. I actually think it's a really big bill because the criminal justice system is holding an offender accountable to the community. The civil justice system is holding them accountable to their victim. And if we expect victims and survivors to have access to health care, to mental health care, to help put their lives back together, it's the civil system that gives them access to the resources to do that. It's not the criminal system. And so it's so important that people be able to pursue civil remedies in order to help put their lives back together. So this is actually a really big bill, I think. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And last call, Trish Gardner.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, my name is Trish Garner. I'm the State Public Policy Chair for AUW of Oregon. That's the American Association of University Women. We've been promoting equity among women and girls since 1881. As we all know, the trauma suffered by victims of sexual violence and assault is real and lasts a lifetime. And many who commit these crimes go unpunished by our criminal system. Nearly 1 in 5 women in the United States have been raped at some time in their lives. The chance of a woman being sexually assaulted during college is about the same as her chance of catching the flu. As reported in the Women's Foundation of Oregon's Counter In report, Oregon women and girls are raped and sexually assaulted at rates that far exceed the national average. An extrapolation of Oregon survey data from the Centers for Disease Control indicates that perpetrators have sexually assaulted 1 million women and girls in Oregon, more than half of the state's female population. In 2014 alone, Oregon Crisis Lines and Sexual Assault Response Services received nearly 30,000 calls from survivors of sexual violence. But these numbers, of course, underestimate the problem. It's estimated that only 2% of survivors report their sexual assault to police. Cases are not reported because victims are afraid to tell the police, school officials, friends, family. They think their stories will not be believed and police can't or won't help them. Victims also face juries biased by cultural deleterious assumptions about rape or fear retaliation from the assailant. A civil route to justice is empowering because, unlike criminal prosecutions where the state is in charge, civil cases enable victims to decide whether and how to proceed in their case. Allowing into evidence the sexual history of a victim pursuing civil justice invokes prejudice and is counterproductive. We need to promote a strong social policy of not only punishing those who engage in sexual violence, but to remove any and all barriers we can that prevent victims from seeking the justice they deserve. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any questions for this person? Thank you very much.
Thank
again.
You.
Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 261A and open a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 261A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves Senate Bill 261A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Williamson will be the carrier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 960A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 960A modifies a 2016 law addressing sexual assault forensic evidence kits, or SAFE kits. Pursuant to the 2016 law, a SAFE kit involving a victim who has not chosen to participate in a prosecution is classified as an anonymous kit. Senate Bill 960A provides that when a victim who has chosen not to make a report to law enforcement subsequently chooses to do so, that the law enforcement agency must reclassify the kit as non-anonymous and submit it to the state police for testing within 14 days of reclassification.
Thank you. Jackie Swanson and Brenda Tracy again, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, again, Jacqueline Swanson here to testify in support of SB 960. This is a pretty simple bill with a pretty simple fix. The point essentially is to go back in and amend that provision of Melissa's law which dealt with the definition of anonymous kits. Previously, it was a little bit too broad. Brenda can speak a little bit more about this, but the task force, which was established pursuant to that law, has met about this. Everyone agreed on the definition. As far as I know, it's fairly uncontroversial, but again, would welcome any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Brenda Tracy, and I'm on the task force, and it's true that all of us unanimously talked about this definition, that it needed to be altered to what it is in this bill. It's a small fix, but it had to do with the interpretation and some of the funding we got from the government. So it's just important that we fix it. And I think we'd actually clarified, I think and maybe Representative Leininger, you had clarified it on the floor last session. So I'm just here to verify that this is a good fix and we should just push it through. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 960A and open a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 960A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 960A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Anybody like to carry the bill?
I'll carry it.
Representative Gorsuch, please. Okay, anything further coming before the committee? Thank you, committee. Thank you for participating. Stand adjourned. Committee, stand adjourned. Thank you, committee. Thank you for participating.